Hello, welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 112. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave on a Thursday morning. Yeah, Thursday morning. And it's cold here in Louisville, Kentucky. It's April. And when I got off work tonight, I had to scrape my windows. And I was cussing. Scraping my windows in April, come on. Mother Nature, go home, you're drunk. But, all right, so we've got some emails to get to on this episode, but first off, right before I left work, I kind of looked at my Instagram stories or whatever, and I think it was Studio C41 put something up about some sort of controversy brewing on the Adorama website, and apparently they put an article up about why this guy, about why he's leaving film or something, and then also apparently like used a photo without permission or something from Ken Rockwell, something like that. But I think they took that photo down quickly. But the article, so I get home and I get out here in the Gutterman Cave and I look at the article. It's on the Adorama website. It's in their Learning Center section. The author was a guy named Mason Resnick. And he looks to be, I don't know, my age or so. And he kind of, after reading this article, kind of reminds me a lot of people that are, you know, a little, I'm not going to say older, maybe a little wiser, seem to be guys that shot film back in the day and then went digital. And sometimes they seem to have more hatred towards film than others, than some younger people. Now, don't lump me in with those guys. I'm not one of those guys. But yeah, it was, I don't really understand the purpose of putting this article up. I mean, I'm sure Adorama sells a lot of film. And I don't know if it was necessarily a good idea to put this up on the Learning Center area and maybe tick off some film photographers. I mean, I know we're a small segment of probably their sales, but it's still a segment of their sales, I'm sure. But anyhow, you should read this article and probably get ticked off or, I don't know, or offended maybe, or, I don't know. I guess it's not meant to be that hateful, but his points just didn't make much sense to me. It's almost like he didn't really understand the real reason why so many people are into film photography right now. So, but like, yeah, he gave like 5 points on this article and about film photography and why he is kind of leaving it. Or apparently he shot quite a bit of it and now he's just done because digital's for him. So he is officially a digital bully. And from this article, I'm definitely going to lump him in the bully category here a little bit because he makes 5 points. I'll just kind of go, I'm not going to, you need to read the article yourself, but the first point he makes is digital costs less. And then he goes through like, you know, with your film and your processing and all that versus buying a digital camera, the economics of like taking 25,000 shots, what it would add up to be, and makes the point that digital would cost less. Well, you know, I love taking photography and I love shooting film photos, but it's going to take me a long time to take 25,000 shots. And I know a lot of digital guys do it because they do the spray and pray thing. But yeah, us film guys, you know, we're happy with a lot less shots that are a lot better. And we had more fun taking than taking 25,000 digital shots, which sounds like an absolute nightmare to try to deal with. But the second thing was digital is faster. That was his second point. And I don't think any of us can argue that. I guess it is faster, but that's kind of not the whole point of film photography, right? It's not the reason. It's not about the speed. It's the enjoyment of the process. So I didn't really understand that point either. His third point was digital is healthier. And he was talking about like darkroom chemicals not necessarily being the best thing in the world to be exposed to. You know, and I guess from an environmental standpoint, maybe digital is, but you know, it's not exactly environmentally safe to be manufacturing these, electronic supercomputer, you know, plastic digital cameras, like, making of, you know, the sensors and all that. That's not all that economically safe and sound, in its own. So, you know, whatever. that's not something that's a point that's kind of irrelevant to me. But the next thing was that the fourth point was digital is more flexible. And it depends on how you look at that. In my opinion, like, I guess if you want to do a ton of post-processing and you feel good doing that kind of stuff, then maybe it could be. But you could do the same sort of post-processing to your scanned film photos. And, you know, there's hundreds of different film stocks out there, so I can choose between like 100 different sensors. Whereas if I buy a digital camera, I've got one sensor to deal with. So that's going to give me kind of all similar looking shots until I change them all in Photoshop or whatever. So not sure I'm buying the whole more flexible thing either. And his last point, well, the fifth point was, I can make beautiful prints from my digital files. And then he talks of printers that makes prints that rival or surpass anything in a dark room. Well, with color printing, I think it's come a pretty good long way, and it probably, you know, with some really good printers and the inks that are out for your inkjet printers now, I do think color can rival a lot of, typical lab color prints, I guess. But have you seen an Ansel Adams print in a museum, a true black and white master darkroom print? I haven't seen any inkjet print that's going to come anywhere close to rivaling the beauty of that sort of thing. And I know they're getting better all the time, but come on, dude, that, like, you're not... I mean, a good darkroom print and black, as far as black and white goes, I'm sorry, that it's no contest there for me. But he ends the article, just kind of gives you an idea of maybe the sort of attitude that he's putting out, but it's like, so go ahead and indulge your film fantasies. You'll learn the basis for good photography, and this will ultimately make you a better digital photographer. And then, I predict, you'll return to the convenience of digital. See ya on the rebound. Well, to the surprise of, at least not to my surprise, and probably the surprise of no one in the comments section, people are kind of letting him have it, which I haven't went through the whole comment section. I just read a little bit of them, and doesn't sound like he's getting a whole lot of love from the film community. And I think it's just, I think it's weird. Like, I don't know, maybe I won't be buying any film from Adorama. Like, I know it's just one dude that works for him, but I don't know, it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. You know, there's always your competitor, V&H, that will be happy to sell me film and maybe not put up articles about how much better digital is than film photography. But, yeah, I don't know. Read the article. It's in the Adorama Learning Center. The author's name was Mason Resnick, and he is officially on the digital bully list. Okay, so let's get to some good old film photography stuff. I'm not trying to be a film versus digital guy. I mean, I shoot both, but I just thought that was a strange take from a website that of a company that probably sells a lot of film. But let me go get these emails together here, and I'll get back with you in the next segment and read these emails. Oh, a couple other points I forgot to mention on the article on Adorama is during the more flexible step, reason number four that he listed, he mentions like film spoilage and the problems with, I guess, film storage and negative storage and all that. Those 25,000 digital files you're going to shoot with your digital camera, those are going to have to be stored on hard drives, I guess, right? Like, let's talk about the archival nature, right? When you find a method of storing your digital photos that's as archival as good old physical negatives and sleeves, you come talk to us about that. Because, I have negatives of my entire life from the time I was a baby that are still viewable and usable. When you find a digital means of storage that can offer that sort of archivability, is that the right word? Archivability? Well, it is now. Come talk to us on that. And let's see, what was the other thing? Oh, yeah, he says, see you on the rebound. Well, buddy, not going to see me on the rebound. I've been through my digital dark ages. I know what side of the fence I'm on. I'll stay on the film side, buddy. You just keep shooting your 25,000 digital files. Okay, I'm done. I'm not going to let this ruin this night because we got some good emails here. Jim Melcher has been updating us quite a bit on his battle with water spots. And, I'd been battling them myself. So he has come back with an update. So Mr. Jim Melcher says, Mike, it worked. PhotoFlow in the hardest water in the Western Hemisphere did the job with no squeegee, no Kim wipes, no nothing. The only peculiarity, which in a way proved how well PhotoFlow does its job, I noticed before I left the bathroom where the two 4x5 negatives were hanging at a 45-degree tilt that, although otherwise dry by all appearances, they each had a thick drop of water on the bottom point. These drops looked like they were going to just evaporate from this position, perhaps leaving a mark right at the corner there. So I took my trusty Kim wipe, toilet paper would have worked just as well, and absorbed both those drops before turning off the light and leaving. I'm going to have to find that Tim Layton video on YouTube and leave a polite comment of dissent about the wedding agent stage. He had mentioned a video from this gentleman that apparently he like rinsed the film with water after the PhotoFlow stage, which didn't really make any sense to me. But anyway, Jim goes on and says, thanks for steering me straight on this issue. I've listened to countless hours of other podcasts on film photography, and this bum steer was never corrected until now. Now I can take my time getting more salt for the softener. He has a water softener in his house, by the way, that was out of salt, so now he gets to do that. But he gets to take his time doing it now because the PhotoFlow apparently works. And so he continues. He says, and the PhotoFlow I buy will actually earn its keep. Jim Melcher. Then he says, P.S., for any of your listeners who hesitate to mix stabilizer and PhotoFlow so they can use this same method when they develop color negatives, I myself did hesitate. Hesitate no longer. The online literature is full of testimonies that support it. If you want a primer on stabilizers, you could start with a post on Photrio, that is PHOTRIO.com. They used to be APUG, aka APUG.org. Called The Definitive Word, I Hope, on Color Stabilizers. I learned there for the first time that stabilizers should be treated with the same caution accorded to other darkroom chemicals. Clean your hands after touching. Well, I'm actually glad, Jim, that you sent that in, because I have had a couple of color negatives that I took a microfiber cloth with some stabilizer on it and kind of ran down the color negatives, a 35 millimeter, to get some water spots off. And I probably didn't wash my hands after that. So I probably don't want to read about how bad stabilizer might be, because I'm pretty sure I didn't wash my hands after that. but yeah, I'll have to make sure I do that in the future. But Jim, I'm so glad that we were able to help you out with that. I'm so glad that Andre and I talking about putting PhotoFlow in with your stabilizer is actually working for you. And I'm just glad that we didn't steer you wrong, even though you called yourself, what was it, a bum steer? I'm just glad we steered you in the right direction. Steered the bum steer in the right direction? I don't know. But then he also sends me another email and he says, Mike, I finally got to episodes 104 and 105. I belatedly realized that the package I got my hands on was Dustin Cogsdale's, long fabled on the podcast. So, yes, Jim Melcher was the winner of Dustin Cogsdale's mystery package. He definitely got his hands on Dustin's package. And he says, the three items are much appreciated. The film retriever will be a lifesaver. The Kodachrome has already assumed an honorable place among my display of archaic photo artifacts. And the Pentax Mini Sport 35M is now my cheap shots challenge rig. I can spend the full $20 on film and processing if I want and not break the rules. Please convey my thanks to Dustin. Well, there you go, Dustin Cogsdale. There's your official thanks from Jim Melcher. He has enjoyed getting his hands on your package. But and the Cheap Shots Challenge is obviously the Sunny 16 Cheap Shots Challenge that he's talking about there. Jim Melcher, is on Desert Al on Instagram. That is D-E-S-E-R-T, Desert Al, O-W-L on Instagram. And he's also under that same moniker on Flickr. And he's also on Twitter at PhotoDeej. It's like F-O-T-O-D-E-E-J on Twitter. All right. Thank you, Jim, for giving us that update. Glad to see we've helped somebody work out through some problems on this thing. And I really appreciate all the updates. And hopefully it'll help others out that are maybe in the same boat. Okay, well, that's. Let me get this next email. I got to read this one to make sure I know what I need to highlight on this next email. So I'm going to take a little break here and get to the last email. Okay, our next email is from Danny Peters, and I haven't heard from Danny in a while, so it was good to hear from him again. And he left a really long email. I'm fine with that, though. He's given me a lot to talk about. I probably could have made a whole episode out of this email, but I'm gonna have to take this email and just kind of bite-sized slices. So I'll kind of go through each little point and comment on that, because there's no way I can read it all and then go back and try to figure out what I need to say about these things. But he says, "Hey, Mike, first off, I want to apologize for not entering the 2018 Grand Prize Extravaganza Film Photography Giveaway Sweepstakes. I got behind a couple of episodes, then went offline for a few days for spring break, and the next thing I know, I have a dozen episodes to catch up on. Then, while trying to catch up on those, you made another dozen or so episodes. I'm caught up now, but not only did I miss out on the 2018 Grand Prize Extravaganza Film Photography Giveaway Sweepstakes, I also missed out on telling the story of the one that got away. Oh well, maybe one of these days I'll join the modern world, get rid of my $10 flip phone, replace it with a shiny, very breakable, expensive, huge mini computer phone, and then I'll have no excuse for missing episodes." Well, Danny, maybe episode 200 we'll have another giveaway. Maybe you'll be able to stay on top of it and get in on that. But yeah, I mean, if one thing's for sure, you can say a lot about this podcast, the one thing that I can take credit for is I'm very prolific. but anyway, he goes on. He says, "Besides all that, I'm writing for two specific reasons. Number one, I think you should try Photographer's Formulary TF4 Fixer. It requires no hypoclear stage, so it saves time. A bottle makes 4 liters of working solution, and that gets you 80 rolls of film. I mix it 1 liter at a time, develop my 20 rolls, then mix the next batch. I also use the Ilford method, which I highly recommend, so much less water usage." I've looked into some Photographer's Formulary stuff, went to their website a little bit, but that sounds interesting. Man, 80 rolls of film, that's a lot, and I like the fact that you can, you know, kind of, 1 liter to do 20 rows, you can kind of keep track of that a little better. I'm always a little worried about my fixer, whether it's actually good or not. And of course, we've talked about in previous episodes how to test your fixer. But I like this. I might have to look into this. So thank you, Danny, for alerting me to the TF4 fixer. He says he also uses the Ilford method. Now, that's a method where you can find out from Ilford's website how to do it, but it's basically like, instead of doing it's like filling up your tank with water, full tank of water, then I think you agitate it, then you pour it out. You do that like several times. It's you can find out, just look up for the Ilford method, I think is what it's called. And about as far as like the rinsing stage and getting it, it's basically a different way to make sure all the fixer is off of your film. So I haven't tried that, but I know a lot of people swear by it. But so then he goes on to point number two. He says, "I'm so glad you finally finished and developed your Diana Mini Roll. I love this camera. A lot of people do not. I mean, yes, it's a complete piece of crap, but it's a wonderful piece of crap. You mentioned some shots not coming out. Before reloading with film, and you need to do this every time, remove the back and hold the camera up to a light source and trip the shutter several times to make sure it's actually opening all the way. I've had two of these, and both of them froze after the first roll. The fix is simple and long-lasting. Put a tiny bit of graphite powder on the shutter blades. Trip the shutter enough times to work it in, and you're good for a long, long time. The other problem is the bulb mode, which stops working eventually. There's an Instructables online to fix that, but it looks very complicated, so I've never bothered. But I do very much celebrate the Diana Mini. It is the best camera for instant ode that I have found. Its low fidelity can be so very cool. I advise skipping the half-frame mode because scanning 72 frames is not at all fun, nor is trying to shoot a full 72 frames. Put some tape on the switches to keep it at square frame mode, normal mode as opposed to bulb, and cloudy, and you'll be set for awesome, crappy, instantly owed photos. I particularly love the effect of shooting ISO 400 black and white film in full sun. The overexposure combined with the low fidelity and graininess can yield some pretty damn cool photos. Thank you, Daddy, for that. I'm going to have to try that. And maybe that's what went wrong with my row. You know, something weird happened about midway through the row where, you know, I had some blank shots where it sort of looked like either the shutter got stuck open or just didn't work at all. Very strange. But so, yeah, I'm going to definitely have to look into that. And, yeah, I probably will tape the bulb mode. I'll tape it on normal mode or whatever, instant mode, I think they call it, because I don't see me doing any bulb mode photography with the Diana Mini. It's definitely a camera I would pretty much just be using in daytime. And but he's right about the crappy instantly owed photo look it has. You know, when I first got them back or got them developed and got them scanned, it's like, I don't know about this Diana Mini, you know. But it really has grown on me, and it's amazing. Just if you're looking for that, for really old school look, I mean, it actually reminds me a lot of the like Instamatic type Kodak Instamatic photos that are, I found in some old 1970s photo albums that I've been scanning of recent. So it kind of has that just old school look, even on like a modern film. And so yeah, it's interesting, and I think I am gonna use it some more, and because it does give me a look that no other of my toy or crappy plastic cameras give me. I mean, they all have their thing, but I think the Diana Mini is really excels at looking, giving you these really vintage looking photos. And then also he puts in, so Danny continues here, he says this is point 2B, so this is the second part to point 2. If you ever end up liking the Diana Mini instant ode aesthetic, the next step for you is to fulfill your Pentax destiny and pick up the Auto 110. Not only is it a Pentax, it's also an SLR and probably the cutest film camera system ever made. Film-wise, I've had horrible results with the Lobster Red Scale film, but the X-Pro Peacock, the Orca Black and White, and the Tiger CN200 all produce instant ode photos. The Tiger especially has a color palette reminiscent of photos from the early 80s. And if you get into 110 enough and don't like the sparse and expensive film selection, you can buy a film slitter on Etsy and cut three rows of 110 from a single row of 120. I haven't done that yet, but it's probably going to happen this year. Huh. Well, there you go. Yeah, I probably should get a one if I ever want to get into 110. Obviously, the Pentax 110 is going to be my first choice. I think that is actually what Aid is shooting in the Cheap Shots Challenge for the Sunny 16 podcast. I think it's what he's shooting with. I don't know. I've sort of avoided 110 because as far as like smaller than 35 millimeter format, I've said many times on here that I want to get back into APS because advanced photo system, because that's what I shot a lot back in the 90s. So I'm wanting to relive my 90s youth and do that. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I will pick up a 110 Pentax, and whenever I get all the other Pentaxes out of the way that I need to buy, because, you know, there's at least three Pentaxes out there I don't own yet. So, but anyway, okay. So then he finishes. He says, as you can see, I can't write short emails. So feel free to not read this on the podcast or to break it up into manageable size pieces. Lastly, you mentioned some instrumental metal bands that you like, but I'm curious to know more about your musical flavor. What bands and albums are your favorites? What effects pedals, amps, and guitars do you prefer? Oh, wow. That's I could do a whole podcast on that, but this is not a music podcast, so I'll try to make it short. But as far as instrumental bands I like, two of my favorites are a band called the Russian Circles and a band called Pelican. They're both out of Chicago, or at least they originated there. And I'm a big fan of those bands. As a matter of fact, my current band, the one I'm kind of leaving soon, has an opportunity to open up for Pelican here in Louisville, Kentucky in July, and I'm kind of wanting to play that show, even though I'm probably not going to be with that band much longer. But as far as effects pedals, amps, and guitars, well, I play a Sun amp, a Sun Model T from the early 1970s. The amp's about as old as me, which so we get along really well. We've both been around the block. And effects pedals, I change effects pedals all the time, but I really like a pedal, distortion pedal called the DOD 250, and also I'm a big fan of all sorts of the Electro Harmonics Big Muff derivatives for like fuzz sounds and the sludginess of that. And as far as guitars, I'm a big Fender Jaguar and Fender Jazzmaster fan, so those are probably my favorite guitars. But other bands are my favorites. Man, I can go on forever about that. But if you want to check out my music, I'm in a band called Total Void right now. We're on Bandcamp. I'm actually leaving that band soon, but that's kind of heavy stuff. It's not necessarily the best thing I've ever done, and that's why I'm kind of wanting to leave it and move on to something else. I mean, I like it, but it's not really what I want to do, so that's why I'm moving on. But the thing I'm most proud of musically, it was a band called Sea Hero, and you will find us on Spotify, Bandcamp. There's some YouTube videos, I believe, from that band, but it is Sea Hero, S-E-A-H-E-R-O. And so if you listen to that band, you probably get an idea of the type of music I like to make and probably a lot of the music I like to listen to. But anyhow, thank you, Danny Peters, for that that email. And yeah, a lot of good information there, and always good to hear from you, brother. And let's see, Danny Peters is on Instagram at Danny Peters Photo, DannyPetersPhoto, Photo, Danny Peters Photo. He's also on Flickr as Danny Peters. Okay, I know it's been a lot longer episode than I planned. I know you guys kind of like for me to keep these like 15 minutes and just keep going longer. This Anchor app is just giving me a license to kill here lately, but since they've taken away the time limits. But all right, that's the end of this episode of the Negative Positives Podcast. You can see my photography on Instagram at Gutterman Photo, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography, and you can email this program at guttermanphoto@gmail.com. Also, join the Facebook group. It is the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. Okay, everyone, stay positive, take some cool film photos, and I will see you soon. Thank you.